Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life. Now here's the host of Faith Matters, Tom McGovern.
It's my joy and delight this Sunday afternoon, the Sunday before New Year's, to welcome back as our guest, Alexa Vogelsong. Alexa, as we continue to reflect on more stories and songs from Christmas time and from the new year.
Thanks. I'm so glad to be back with you today.
Just by way of acknowledgement, some of the commentary that you will be using is drawn from a two-volume work, Stories Behind the Best Love Songs of Christmas, with the author Ace Collins, and the book is published by Zondervan Press. What is the first music you'll be sharing with us this afternoon?
We're going to begin today with Good King Wenceslas. So Wenceslas was a real member of European royalty, daily touching the lives of his subjects with Christian kindness and charity during the 900s in Bohemia. He became a ruling duke at the age of 15, and when his twin brother and his mother attempted to overthrow him, rather than have them executed, he showed them mercy and sent them into exile. He was wise, like Solomon, built a nation on true justice and mercy, living the example of Christ by sharing everything he had with his subjects, everything from firewood to meat. And many peasants during his time turned to Christianity because of the Christ-like example Wenceslas set. And every Christmas Eve, he would visit the poorest and neediest of his people and personally, with the help of some pages to do the carrying, deliver food, clothing, and firewood, regardless of the often harsh weather conditions. So as I mentioned before, Wenceslas had a twin named Boleslas, and at the age of 22, a group of powerful pagan leaders persuaded the exiled twin to return and participate in a revolt which led to the assassination of Wenceslas while he was on his way to church. And it is said that as he was dying on the church steps, Wenceslas looked up at his twin brother in the eye and said, "Brother, may God forgive you." And the impact of this exchange between them caused Boleslas to reject the pagan folks who had gotten him into power, to embrace Christianity and embrace the legacy his brother had established. And eventually, the crown of Wenceslas became the symbol of the entire Czech nation. The writer of the carol, John Mason Neal, closely identified with Wenceslas in that he too reached out to saint and sinner alike. And though he was often rebuked by Christians and exiled by the church, Neal constantly tried to reform prostitutes, thieves, and even murderers. And when he wasn't involved in mission outreach, Neal spent a lot of time reviewing ancient Latin songs and texts. And one of the stories he came across was that of Duke Wenceslas. And he sensed that this would be a wonderful role model for children, so he rewrote the old tale in verse form, making the Duke a king and matching his lyrics to an established Latin melody. So the carol quickly became a favorite in Europe after its publication, and by the last part of the 19th century, it was sung throughout the United States as well. You know, both the protagonist and the writer of this carol lived lives that exemplified faith, hope, and charity, and those are hallmarks of the Christmas season. Was the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, led by Richard Condy, with organist Alexander Schreiner on the Ultimate Christmas Collection from the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. That's on the Sony label.
What a beautiful, beautiful reflection, and the music itself to introduce us to the new year with a song and with a narration very appropriate to the season. You have another narration, another story, and a piece of music that is appropriate to this season.
This next thing on our list today is O Holy Night. So in 1847, a priest in a small French town decided that he wanted a special poem for his Christmas Mass, and he commissioned a local poet named Placide Capot de Roquemar, who actually was a commissionaire of wines and not an avid churchgoer, but he commissioned him to write a poem. So while traveling in a coach to Paris, Capot began to read Luke's account of the birth of Jesus. And in that coach, he imagined what it must have been like to be present on that miraculous night. And as the words of the Gospel of Luke and his imagination took hold, the beautiful lines of his new poem began to flow through his pen onto the page. And by the time he arrived at his destination, the words of Cantique de Noël were complete. But Capot didn't think the poem was enough. He really felt it was meant to be sung. So he reached out to his good friend, Adolphe Charles Adams, who was an accomplished composer of operas and ballets. And even though Adolphe was Jewish and didn't embrace the message of the poem, he took this on for his friend and married a memorable melody to Capot's Christian lyrics. So the priest who had commissioned the poem absolutely loved this song that had been produced by this really unlikely hymn-writing duo, and Cantique de Noël was performed at the Midnight Mass on Christmas Eve in 1847 and soon embraced by the French church and sung in many Catholic Christmas services all over France. But Capot decided to leave the church and join the socialist movement. And when he did that, church leaders took a closer look at the song and realized that the music had been written by a Jew. So they publicly denounced this socialist Jewish song. But in spite of their stand, the French people's love for the hymn kept it in the forefront of their homes and many community celebrations throughout the season. Now, they weren't the only ones enchanted by the song. There was an American writer and abolitionist named John Sullivan Dwight. And when he heard lines from the third verse that said, "Chains shall he break, for the slave is our brother," he was simply moved deeply, and he translated the French song into English and printed O Holy Night in his magazine, and the song quickly found favor during the Civil War, especially in the North, as an anthem of freedom. Now, meanwhile, back in France, the censured song made a miraculous appearance in the Franco-Prussian War. Legend has it that on Christmas Eve in 1871, while fighting raged on between Germany and France, a French soldier jumped out of his trench and began to sing O Holy Night. And after listening to the familiar Christmas hymn, a German soldier climbed out of his fortification and sang From Heaven Above to Earth I Come, those words by Martin Luther. And between the two of them, everybody began to join in. The fighting stopped for the next 24 hours, and both sides observed Christmas Day. And shortly after this incident, the French church embraced Cantique de Noël, or O Holy Night, once more into their holiday services. Now, you would think this would be the end of the story, right? But it's not. On Christmas Eve in 1906, radio operators on ships and wireless owners at newspapers were shocked to hear something no one had ever heard over the radio: a human voice. Live. Reginald Fessenden spoke the first words ever broadcast over radio airwaves, and it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And he read the entire account of Luke's account of the birth of Jesus, and then he picked up his violin and he began to play the first song ever broadcast over the airwaves, O Holy Night. And this incredible story of an incredible hymn reminds us that the message of peace on earth transcends religious and political divides. It reaches within and across nations amidst the horrors of war to encourage us to embrace peace as a way of life, not just during the holiday season, but each and every day.
Thank you.
And that was Noel Edison and the Alora Festival Singers with organist Michael Bloss on their album, The Wonder of Christmas.
At this point, Alexa will take a brief break and we'll be back shortly to continue this wonderful celebration of Christmas music.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Here again is your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome back to Faith Matters on this Sunday afternoon as we anticipate the new year. I'm delighted to have as our guest Alexa Vogelsong. And Alexa, in this segment of the program, you have some more stories and music to celebrate the 12 days of Christmas and the upcoming new year.
I do, and this first song is I Wonder As I Wander. The discovery of this Christmas folk song really fits well with the ballad's title because for years, John Jacob Niles wandered around the Appalachian Mountains in search of the origin of songs. Born in Louisville, Kentucky, and inspired by an old black field worker who sang spirituals learned in his youth, Niles penned his first folk song at the age of 25. As a pilot during World War I, he put together an impressive catalog of American folk songs by asking each soldier that he met to share a song, which Niles wrote down and memorized the tunes. And when he came home from the war, Niles attended the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music and worked for the Chicago Lyric Opera and Westinghouse Radio. And by 1940, he was an RCA recording artist, singing in New York to crowds who came to hear the opera, along with his great big suitcase full of American folk songs, which he would sing backstage to himself while singing opera for the crowds. So he decided he was more of a historian than a performer, and he moved back home to Kentucky and began traveling through the Appalachian Mountains from town to town looking for undiscovered folk songs. And the library of his work is one of the most important that we have of American folk songs to this day. So on a cold December day in North Carolina, Niles was observing people from a poor community going about their daily lives, and it was as if the modern world had never found this unspoiled place. And he noticed this little girl sitting by herself on a bench, and unaware that she had an audience, she was softly singing a song to herself that Niles had never heard before. So he went over and introduced himself and sat down and asked her about the song, and all she knew was that her mother had taught it to her, and her grandmother had taught it to her mother, and so on. And he asked her to sing it again, and she smiled and quietly repeated the ballad's short verses. She called the song I Wonder As I Wander, and it haunted Niles. The lyrics embraced the joy and wonder of Christmas, but also lingered on the sacrifice of a child grown into a man that died on a cross. Soaring happiness combined with unparalleled sorrow seemed to share the elements of both African American spirituals and the irony of Irish ballads. The words and the music were perfect, simple, direct, and inspired. And although he continued to search for the origins of this song for the rest of his life, Niles could never trace the song back farther than that little girl in North Carolina, a child he never found again.
Jesus.
That was I Wonder As I Wander, music collected by John Jacob Niles and arranged by John Rutter, sung by the choir of Clare College, Cambridge, England, under the direction of Graham Ross, that out on their album called Mater Ora Filium on the Harmonia Mundi label.
Again, in the spirit of an ongoing celebration of Christmas and of the holidays, we have the story behind a very popular piece of music for this time of the year, We Three Kings.
You know, no celebration of the Christmas season would be complete without the wise men following the star to find Jesus and offer him gifts. And while scholars have debated for centuries over the reference to the wise men in the second chapter of Matthew, were they kings or astrologers or magi, meaning dream interpreters, and how many were there really, and where exactly did they come from? Well, their arrival is generally celebrated by the church as the 12th day of Christmas, called Epiphany. The carol was written by a 37-year-old Episcopalian priest named John Henry Hopkins Jr., who wanted to give his nieces and nephews a special gift for Epiphany that would both entertain and educate them. So he imagined what it might have been like to be one of those wise men, and he coupled this with his knowledge from his seminary studies to create a memorable song that includes a lot of lore and imagination, a melody that has an Oriental or Middle Eastern feel to it, and a rhythm kind of reminiscent of a camel's gait. And his text draws attention to the gifts recorded in Matthew's gospel, referencing a deeper interpretation of how they paralleled Christ's life and death and purpose from a theological point of view. Hopkins published We Three Kings of Orient Are in a songbook called Carols, Hymns, and Songs. And at the turn of the following century, when many churches decided that carols should be included in hymnals, this became one of America's most popular Christmas songs. That was the Mormon Tabernacle Choir under the direction of Richard Condy from their Sony release, The Ultimate Christmas Collection.
Alexa, we'll take a short break now and we'll be back in a few moments to continue this wonderful celebration of the season.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Here again is your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. Our special guest this Sunday afternoon, the Sunday before New Year's, is Alexa Vogelsang. And Alexa, through this two-part series, we have been reflecting on songs and stories that are very appropriate to the season.
We are going to talk about the 12 days of Christmas. The 12 Days of Christmas can seem like nothing more than a novelty song or a nonsensical entertainment, but in reality, it was one of the most important teaching tools of the Catholic Church at one time. Beginning in the 16th century, British Catholics were forbidden by law to practice their faith. The only legal Christian denomination of the British Empire was the Church of England, and if you spoke or wrote about your faith as a Catholic, you were arrested, you were tried, and depending on the severity of your offense, you might be hung or you might be drawn and quartered. And by the way, your kids were subject to the same laws that you were. So very much like the early Christian church in Rome, the Catholics in England at this time went underground, and they held secret masses, they studied their doctrine behind closed doors, they hid all signs of faith at home, and had the problem of how do we teach our kids what we believe, since teaching them by writing it down could kill not only the writer, but the reader as well. So they hit upon this idea of transmitting these messages in secret code. And one of the most successful codes words ever invented by the Catholic underground during this time was this Christmas carol, which on the surface appears to make no sense at all. It found its way into pubs, into concert halls, and even the royal palace, all the while the Anglicans never suspecting that the lyrics were not about a lovesick boy or the 12 days leading up to Christmas or even the 12 days between Christmas and Epiphany, but the lyrics were about some of the most important elements of doctrine of the outlawed Catholic Church. The first gift, the single partridge in the pear tree, symbolized Christ's sacrifice for his children and the cross. Two turtle doves, Old and New Testament, as well as truth and peace. Three French hens, the three gifts of the wise men, which would have been expensive. Four calling birds, the authors of the Gospels, trumpeting the story of Jesus, and five gold rings, the five books of the Torah. Six geese a-laying, God created the earth in 6 days, and seven swans a-swimming, seven gifts of the Holy Spirit, mentioned by Paul in his letter to the Romans in chapter 12, eight maids a-milking, the common man, as well as the eight Beatitudes in Matthew chapter 5, the nine fruits of the Spirit hidden behind the images of nine ladies dancing, 10 lords a-leaping, the Ten Commandments, 11 pipers piping, 11 of the 12 disciples who remained faithful to Jesus, and the final gift, 12 drummers drumming the 12 elements of the Apostles' Creed. Now, by the time Britain freed the Catholic faith, the words had taken on a life of their own, and today we can hardly sing it without laughing at its unusual message and the air capacity it takes to get through it. But perhaps the fun that masked its original intent is why the 12 Days of Christmas has survived for so long. That was the Mormon Tabernacle Choir and the New York Philharmonic Orchestra, led by the legendary Leonard Bernstein, from the Ultimate Christmas Collection on the Sony label.
Alexa and Chuck, it would not be appropriate to introduce the new year without reflecting on our Scottish and Irish, especially Scottish, ancestry and traditions. Christmas and New Year's very much celebrated in the Celtic tradition. Among the Scots especially, New Year's Eve is Hogmanay celebration, especially with haggis, which is a form of black pudding. In the spirit of the season, we have looked at Auld Lang Syne or Auld Lang Syne. We decided it was the old.
Old long ago.
Old long ago.
Yeah.
Not being satisfied with long ago, the Scots have old long ago. It really stress. How tradition-laden it is. So,
well, you know, Tom, elements of the song can be traced back all the way to the 1500s.
And, of course, popularized by Robert Burns, Bobby Burns in his poetry. And then you have an interesting story about Guy Lombardo.
Yeah, Guy Lombardo first heard the tune and the song, Auld Lang Syne, in the early 1920s while he was touring England. And he really didn't know anything about the song's history. But he thought the melody would be a great sentimental number for his orchestra as a slow dance song. So he and the Royal Canadians began playing from at least the mid-20s on a very slow, weepy version of this. So on New Year's Eve in 1929, he was playing in New York at the big party where they were going to count down to midnight. And maybe because of the country's bleak mood, given the stock market crash that had just happened, Lombardo chose this song to lead into the big countdown. And for him, he thought, well, a song that embraces the importance and value of friendship over worldly possessions seemed like a perfect way to look back and find some good things in a really bad year. One of the things it did, however, was to give millions of Americans the mistaken impression that the English poet Robert Burns had penned Auld Lang Syne just to welcome in the new year.
We will go out on music, first of all, with Guy Lombardo's rendition of Auld Lang Syne, and then a song version from Ed Miller, who will be the guest artist at the Robert Burns Society dinner on January the 25th. So with this, what shall I say, beautiful combination of two styles, we will greet the new year.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and old lang syne? For old lang syne, my Jo, for old lang syne, we'll take a couple kindness yet for auld lang syne.
Alexa, thank you so much for this wonderful series on Christmas New Year songs with commentary. It's been just delightful, so heartwarming. And Chuck Luck, thank you for so graciously putting this wonderful program together. On behalf of all of us here at the station, we want to wish each family and each person listening all the joy and wonders of the new year. And we pray and hope that out of your own traditions, out of the sacredness of your own family traditions, we hope that this time of holiday has been a time of renewal, of peace and joy, with every blessing and goodness in the year ahead. God bless you.
You've been listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Tom McGovern. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, a service of Texas Tech Public Media. Thank you.